This is Jim Eakster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with Craig Freeman, LSU Associate Professor of Mass Communications, who is hightailing it to Stillwater, Oklahoma, to become a professor of journalism at Oklahoma State University. He's less miles in reverse. We'll talk with Craig Freeman about what's happening with LSU and what's going on with the East Baton Rouge Parish School Board. He's a member of that entity as well, and recently the board sacked the superintendent, Bernard Taylor, and oh yes, there is a big issue simmering called Common Core. And journalist Hal Markovitz, he has written a book called Olay about the fascination with the annual running of the bulls, which is becoming more dangerous each year. We'll talk with him and hear from Jennifer Mayer of CASA in Baton Rouge. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Eakster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757 outside the area. And Eakstershow at WRKF.org. Our leadoff guest is Dr. Craig Freeman, Associate Professor of the Manship School of Mass Communication, soon leaving LSU. In fact, have you officially left?
Officially left LSU. Actually, I don't think I've given my letter of resignation yet, but they know. And so
know.
We'll start.
You're not breaking news.
Not breaking news.
But
there.
14 years at LSU, and Craig Freeman is one of the most ubiquitous personalities in our world. He is a member of the school board and also a fixture on Louisiana Public Broadcasting. So most people know who Craig Freeman is, and this is a loss to our state that a man of your talents is moving to Stillwater, Oklahoma. So we'll get to that. But what about what's going on with the school board right now? Bernard Taylor was sacked despite your objections. He's got a little less than a year remaining and doesn't appear to want a buyout of any kind. Why was he canned?
It's a tough one for me. I mean, I think that the city will lose a lot when he goes. There's a lot of innovation that he's brought to the city that we won't have when he's gone. And it makes it hard for us to recruit another person of his caliber when we continue to kind of get rid of superintendents quickly. And so I personally think that he is by far the best educational mind we've had in the system in the last 20 years. And so for him to be gone is going to be a real loss.
You still have a year remaining on your term with the school board.
Six months.
Right. So will you run for re-election?
No. It was enough. I didn't have any enemies to punish. I didn't have any friends to please. And so I can get out before I have any of those.
But you will fulfill your term.
Absolutely.
So you'll be coming back for meetings and that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Well, what's the next step as far as finding a replacement for Taylor.
Nobody knows. And so, he's here until next year. We'll have a new board in January. And so there are some of my colleagues that are not going to run. There are some that may not get reelected. And so I think it's best for that next board to hire the next superintendent. It was horrible, the process of going and trying to find a new superintendent. The sheriff said there were credible threats on our lives. And so there was a sheriff that actually escorted us out of meetings. It is not anything that I would wish on my worst enemy. And so I'm sad that they have to go through that process as they start their tenure.
Why are the passions so intense?
I don't know. I mean, I think actually I do know. We've got a fundamental split in the board and probably in the parish. And so if you want a better school district, you've got a couple of options. You can either put all resources on our lowest performing schools to move them up. But the problem is when you do that, the schools that are not low performing say, what happens to our resources? And so we've got a town that says, if you put all of your resources in one part of town, you're taking resources away from another part of the town, and we don't like that. And so, it's a problem that you see in the city. It's a problem that you see on the board. And so until we get some consensus as to what the best path forward is, we're going to get stuck in these kinds of situations.
297-5633, your number, 877-217-5757, and Inkstershow at WRKF.org. For Dr. Craig Freeman, Associate Professor of Mass Communication, LSU, 14 years at the Old War School, soon going to Stillwater, Oklahoma.
Go Pokes.
The Cowboys, yeah. You have a cowboy hat and all that good stuff, I'm sure. But Casey asked about the St. George situation. What would that do if we have a breakaway city in our midst?
You know, I personally think it cripples the system. One of the best parts of the system is that when a principal retires or moves to another position, we've got a great stable to kind of help with that. We lose that when we get split into many parts in the system. There are economies of scale that allow us to do things for, gifted students, other students that have special needs, magnet programming. It's harder to do those things when you've got a smaller pool and when you can't share those resources across town.
297-5633, Jim on the new bridge. Good morning, Jim. You're on the air with Dr. Craig Freeman.
Yes, I would like to ask how he feels about Common Core, and is there a southern city with the racial makeup we have whose schools are improving greatly?
All right, he asked about
Comp.
Thank you, Jim, on the new bridge, which is now 44 years old. Common Core. And is there a southern city with our kind of demographics that is doing better than we are as far as public schools?
I don't think so. In the last 2 years, you've seen 43% of our schools move up. You saw 12 schools move two letter grades. I think, unfortunately, the letter grades are a better predictor of poverty than they are of the quality of teaching. We know that we want to put the best teachers in the toughest schools so that those kids get better. I always joke, and my wife doesn't like the joke, that my son and my kids don't need the best teachers, because if there's a problem in math, we're going to come home, we're going to work on math together. But there are places that that doesn't happen, and so we want the best teachers in those schools. We're doing as well, if not better, than most schools in the South. Common Core is going to be a big issue, and it's one I think that we need to embrace more than we have.
Well, yesterday there was a development. Three leaders of the state's top school board proposed a one-time use of controversial Common Core test questions for the 2014-2015 school year, as well as traditional Louisiana exam questions. And it was a compromise offer to Governor Jindal, who in 3 hours later sent his Commissioner of Administration Christy Nichols forward to say that no go, that the services, she says, Christy Nichols, are not within the scope of either contract, and the Jindal administration will not support this so-called compromise. I saw Stephen Wagasback speak before the Rotary Club this week, a longtime Jindal insider who's now head of LABI. He said that this was being blown out of proportion, that the show would go on, that nothing to worry about, but it appears there's quite a bit to worry about.
It's tough. I don't care what you call it. We need to make sure that our kids are better prepared. I can give again an example from my house, where my kids do very well in math. And they can do a math problem, but when you go to a store that has a sale and you say, hey, this is 20% off, what does that mean? The kids don't get it. And so whether you call it Common Core or muffins for moms, mm-hmm. we need to do something to make sure that kids understand that the percentages that they're doing in math class are the same as the percentages off that we see in a department store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a national figure this week showing that the U.S. is in the middle of the pack when it comes to financial literacy, the exact same thing you're talking about.
Right. You can call it Common Core, you can call it whatever you'd like, but we've got to make sure that these students understand how things work. Mm-hmm. It was really sad. These guys were building a fence behind my house, and they were trying to figure out how many posts they need. And it took them about 10 minutes. We want our students and our graduates to understand how to apply math that they know to the everyday situations that they have.
Mm.
Those tests are tough. I looked at one the first time, and it was a fourth grade test. I wasn't sure that I could pass it the first time. But when I talked to some of our foreign language immersion teachers, they say, this is what we learned. This is what we are prepared to teach. Mm-hmm. And so if we're going to be competitive nationally, let alone globally, we've got to challenge our students more. And so if you don't like the term Common Core, I don't care. But, do something to make sure that our kids are ready to take what they learn in the classroom and apply it every day.
One of the statements you made among many pertinent ones this morning is that the class scores follow the poverty index.
Yeah.
That's something that I don't think is totally appreciated.
You know, it's hard. You know, I knew when I campaigned, I would see little kids sitting outside of school at 7:30 because their parents are going to work. And so, you know, we can't open the school for legal reasons until 8. Wouldn't it be great if we had some money to give kids a little extra enrichment in the morning? You know, we spend a lot of money on other things, but at Park Elementary, you know, you've got kids that we had summer school a couple of years ago. And so for essentially $40,000, we gave kids an education option in the summer. Parents loved it. You know, because you're a hardworking parent, and now you have to figure out what happens at camp week to week to week. Instead, they go to school, they get, you know, breakfast and lunch, and they learn. And so we don't have that drop mm-hmm. that we have every summer when kids are away from school. And so Park went from an F school to a C school, $40,000 for two summers in investment. And so, you know, we've got, you know, agencies and groups that are giving money to new operators to come into the parish. For a pretty minimal investment, we can give kids a safe place to be, and we can make sure that they're learning. And so those are the kinds of things that I wish we could do more of. Those are the kinds of things that I think Taylor was moving us in the direction of that we're just, you know, we're going to lose when he goes.
297-5633 for Craig Freeman, East Baton Rouge Parish School Board member and professor of mass communication at LSU, soon moving to the Sooner State. Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on with Craig.
Morning. Tell me, has the governor of Oklahoma cut taxes for the rich Oklahomans and funding for higher ed?
You've got a two-part question. And so the first part is the governor in Oklahoma is very similar to the governor here. And so you see, you know, you see interesting tax things. I think they also pulled out of Common Core already. That governor was faster to do that. On the other hand, I think in Oklahoma, you have a real appreciation for higher ed. And so you see good funding for both OSU and OU. And so, you know, here, we didn't get raises for, you know, 4 or 5 years. And then, you know, at least in some units, the administrators were taking the lion's share of the raises that were coming. And so, you know, you don't get a raise for a couple of years, and then the raise that you get is cut by administrators. It makes it tough. You don't see that in Oklahoma. Another thing that I think makes Oklahoma a little bit different is there are two real statewide institutions. One of the concerns I have at LSU is that more and more students are coming from right here. And so, you know, I think it's, you know, between 60 and 70% of students come from a 6-parish area. And so that hurts us. Jefferson Parish still sends a lot of kids to LSU, but it's hard for us to go to Monroe and say you need to support LSU when the legislators in Monroe don't have, you know, constituents that go to LSU. In Oklahoma, you don't see those same kinds of problems. Kids come from all over the state.
Carlos at Southern University, you're on the air with Dr. Freeman. Hi, Carlos.
Hi, folks. It's a sad day for me and for Baton Rouge. Craig Freeman's a class act. We came to Baton Rouge around the same time. I know Craig has seen a lot of the changes that have, positive changes that have occurred. And so, Craig, just want to say thank you so much for being a positive influence and helping my wife and I choose to move our children into the public education system here in Baton Rouge. You'll be sorely missed, but certainly Stillwater will gain, and we hope the best for you and your family, and thanks so much for everything you've done for us thus far.
I truly appreciate it, Carlos. Carlos and Carlos's family is a great example of just of what we're trying to do in EBR. You know, they were going to a very good private school, but realized that there was a great opportunity that was in the public schools. Passionate about education, I remember as we tried to do some changes at their mm-hmm. school, there was a lot of pressure of tension right. from the parents. They worked with Dr. Taylor, and so now we're going to add Mandarin Chinese and Spanish to another school in the parish. It's really because of great parents like them that we're able to move the system in the right direction.
Thank you, Carlos. Appreciate it. And we shall return with Dr. Craig Freeman and get some more telephonic responses to his leaving LSU and what's going on with education at other levels in Louisiana. Is Common Core continues to be a source of anguish for many and a fighting point between the superintendent and the governor. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Your number is 877-217-5757, wherever you are, and if you're dialing locally, 297-5633. Dr. Craig Freeman is with us, and Mike in New Iberia, good morning to you. You're on the air with Craig.
Thank you. I can understand the wisdom in sending the best teachers to the poorest performing schools. What cultural preparation do you offer these teachers, and do you have systems in place to protect them from burnout and dropout? Because that has been a problem. I'll take my answer off the air.
You raise a really great point. I mean, I think a part of what you need to do is you have to have a great principal. And so that's I think job one. I think it's also a huge mistake to have a large influx of new teachers. And so a lot of times what happens is the teachers that are there are able to kind of work with the newer teachers, even if they're experienced teachers, to help make sure that teachers understand, you know, things like the neighborhood and things like the culture of the school. It is not easy work. I can tell you, I'm very comfortable teaching college students. Middle schools still scare me after 4 years of going in and looking at middle schools. But I think one of the keys that we have to have is that we've got to make sure that, principals are not in their offices, but are in classrooms. And that was one of the problems, I think, with the legislation proposed earlier this year. We don't want teachers, we don't want principals to be accountants. We don't want principals to push paper. We want them to be in classrooms helping teachers get better. And so that's what we're trying to do more of in East Baton Rouge Parish.
297-5633, Charles on North Foster. You're on WRKF with Craig Freeman. Hi, Charles.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning, Mr. Freeman.
Good morning.
Quick question. Common Core, we know private school kids didn't have to take the leap. And so my question to Mr. Freeman is, do you think high-stakes testing is necessary, and is it fair to public school students? And lastly, I'm in North Baton Rouge. There is an educational divide here. We don't have a Struma High School. We don't have Capital High School. What plan is in place on your school board to bring these schools back into the community? Because I personally think it's a disgrace.
Thank you. I think it's a disgrace, too. I mean, I think really what's happened is that schools that were moving in the right direction are now no longer with the system, and in some cases are no longer operating. And so we've got empty buildings that taxpayers paid for that we can't educate kids in. I think we've got to do much more in North Baton Rouge. You see that at places like Brookstown, where, again, a couple of years ago, we didn't have a plan for what to do there. Now we've got a fantastic a magnet program. The new principal there is phenomenal. He was the dean of students and an assistant principal, associate principal at McKinley, is now moving up to Brookstown. He's going to be great. Our biggest problem is we don't have the buildings in North Baton Rouge to do what we'd like to do, that causes problems all around the parish because we have to bus kids to other places. Mm-hmm. And so their parents can't get as involved, and other parents are concerned. We've got to do more. The state is not giving those schools back. I wish that all of our legislators, instead of focusing on splitting the parish, would help us get those schools back so we can do work in those schools. And so when you've got an empty school building or a building that's filled with state administrators instead of teachers and kids, that's a problem that I know our legislative delegation could solve, and that would help a lot of the problems that we have in the parish.
What do you think the catalyst was for Governor Jindal to have a change of heart on Common Core?
I don't know. I don't get a chance to talk to the governor very often. And so, I think that there are, I think when the federal government endorses something that there are states that are concerned about that. I want to say it, I guess, in a nice and respectful way to both the governor and the federal government, and that is get over it. We've got to give kids a better opportunity. And the only way to do that is to challenge them more. And so I can't imagine the governor is opposed to challenging students. And so if it's just the name Common Core, we can all get over it and make sure that we're pushing kids as much as we can.
So I presume you've been to Stillwater, Oklahoma.
I have. I can't tell you how excited I am. It's a cool place. They've got a focus on what they want to do. And so they're focused on students. They're not focused on administration. They're focused on the future. And so they're working on multimedia journalism, which is where I'll be. They're also doing stuff in sports media and in strategic communications. But instead of being all things to all people, they are focused on what they can do best.
Your background's in law.
It is. It is. Although I won't be teaching law up there, and so it'll be a little odd. I think fresh starts are always good, and so I'll be doing some things in the entrepreneurial part of the school. And so we'll have drones flying. We'll be trying some text-based new services. We're going to do all that we can to figure out what's the next step. And so, you know, one of the problems that I thought I felt here was, you know, it's great to have the experience of seasoned newspapermen, but it's hard to figure out how they're going to help our students understand the digital platforms they'll work on next. And so you need a balance, and I thought we were getting a little out of balance here. I can't wait to get up to Oklahoma State to try to see the future.
Well, is an interesting move for a guy who's been 14 years at LSU, and usually people who stay here this long end up staying for the duration, but what was the catalyst to leave?
You know, I mean, I think for me, I do not want to leave, although I'm very excited about going. Not getting the raises for a couple of years and then having raises kind of cut was an eye-opener for us. We've got a lot of administrators at our school, and so we've got, you know, 8 deans and 2 directors and a faculty of about 25. And so, you know, when you look around, you say, This is. I don't see how we're going to get better in the short term or the long term. I love Baton Rouge, and I'm not looking forward to leaving, but I'm absolutely looking forward to getting a chance to go someplace where they're focused on the future.
Melinda on I-12. Melinda, you're on the air with Craig Freeman.
Yes, I'd like to know what the Manship School or LSU did to try to keep Dr. Freeman, given the fact that he has been a advocate in our community on the BREC board, on the school board, an associate professor. What did LSU do to try to keep you here?
Very, very kind. Nothing is the short answer. I understand, you know, our school doesn't do counteroffers, and so there was really no need I didn't expect that from them. I did go to the administration to say that I was worried, and I didn't think that I was going to stay for long. And you know, I think, like you said, Jim, when you've been here for 14 years, people don't think you're going to leave. And so I think that they said, "Oh, we don't need to give a raise. We don't need to have equitable salaries. He won't go anywhere." And so Oklahoma State is fantastic. You know, great, great professors over there. Danny Shipka, a former professor at LSU, who I think was pushed out, is going to be there, and I'll get a chance to teach with him, and so we'll have a ton of fun. But nothing from the school. A good friend, Kirby Goidell, is also leaving. And Kirby is the guy that brought in $800,000 a year to the school. And so when Kirby goes and when that money goes, you know, for a while you kind of are bailing out the ship, and at a certain point you have to look for a life raft. And that's what I did. When the rainmakers stop making rain, it gets a little hard.
Well, what you're experiencing in mass communication is going on campus wide.
It is. I mean, my classes went from 200 to 800, but we didn't get an increase for those.
800?
Yeah, no, I teach a class of 800.
800?
Yes, this is 800. Last year it was 752. The year before
Where
it was
do you hold class?
In the Cox Auditorium. It is a
752 students in one class?
Yeah. No, I mean, and it's, you know, it's a challenge.
What class is it?
It's the Intro to Mass Communication. You know, everybody needs to know a little bit about mass communication. And so, you know, I think students get a lot. It's a gen ed class. And so you got engineers and scientists and mass comm students. You know, but there's no difference. You know, they treated that class the same way as they would treat a class of 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. And so, you know.
Well, I suspect you didn't give essay.
No, although actually they did in the past. And so before I started teaching the class, they gave students writing assignments. And then
my goodness,
I don't know that they ever
grading that.
right. No, and then I had one graduate assistant, and so we would be grading until next year.
297-5633 for Craig Freeman. John in the Garden District. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning.
Nice to see you go, Craig.
Oh, thank you.
Um, Here's my question. Recently, there was a proposal from BRAC that they put out to the legislature that basically wanted to empower principals. Bernard Taylor responded to that, kind of what I perceive to be a political response, to give his principals some power in order to answer to that. And that some power that he gave them was school-based budgeting. And in that school-based budgeting, in my particular case, where that trickled down was, at Baton Rouge Center for Visual and Performing Arts, the principal decided to cut the position for the art teacher. And even though the lady that used to teach art is going to be both the lead magnet teacher and the art teacher and going to do one of those for free, if she gets hit by a bus or something gets bad happens to her, we're not going to have that position. This seems to be indicative of a bigger problem of Bernard Taylor not giving a vision to people to what he wants to have happen.
It's tough, and let me say, first off, you know, please, I hope Miss Miller doesn't get hit by a bus. She's a phenomenal art teacher and a phenomenal magnet lead teacher, and so hopefully no injuries to her. It's a catch-22. I mean, I think that principals need some autonomy. And again, we don't want them focusing on their budget all of the time, but I think what the system tried to do, and I think it did very well, was say, this is how much you have as a school. If you'd like to cut, say, half of your librarian to have more of a guidance counselor, this is what that budget looks like. Now, sometimes the our visions for the school may be different from the principal's vision for the school. A big part of that is also what I think Taylor did very well, was make sure that parents were involved in that decision-making process. And so at BRCVPA, when you had that process work fully, I think you got a chance to see how it can work. The bad news is, we're not getting fully funded from the state. I think places like New Schools for Baton Rouge are great because they show that if you actually give schools more money, they can achieve more. And so, what we need to do is stop cutting education, stop saying that we want to advance and then cut education. And so if you are committed to making Louisiana a state that moves from number 48 or 49 to number 35 or 20, you've got to invest in your future. Oil is not going to go away, but our intellectual capital will if we're not doing what we need to do to make sure that we're educating kids all the way through adulthood.
What's going to be your biggest legacy after 14 years?
I'm proud of what we've been able to do on the school system and at BREC. I feel very, very proud to have been a big part of two outstanding superintendents. And so if that is my only legacy for Baton Rouge, then I'll sleep well. I've got so many phenomenal students. And so for me, it's not as much changing mm-hmm. Baton Rouge on the macro, but, just dealing with great students. Teslan Felician is a student that just graduated and was going to go to Atlanta to work for Turner. It was a kid who hopefully we tried to make sure that he was treated well and learned a lot at LSU. And so for me, it's students like Mr. Felician or Kyle Whitfield or Summer Suleiman or Farrah Reed who are much better people because they got something good from us in school.
Bridget in Mid-City, please be brief. Bridget, you're on with Craig Freeman.
Yes, I'd like Mr. Freeman to speak to local educators being passed over as principals to hire former RSD personnel who commute from New Orleans every day.
Yeah, I think we always want to have the best. And so I think in District 6, we've had both, right? We've had people that are homegrown, and we've had people that come from far away. I'm really excited about our new principal at McKinley, a guy who was local, who went to local high school here, left, and did some really cool things in Dallas, and then came back and is now going to be a principal for us at McKinley. And so I think we can't look at the zip code where they apply from, but we need to look at what their abilities are, and we want to have the best principals possible here. I think that's what we're doing.
Well, we're going to miss you. When you look now, you can see how teachers, professors are rated online, and Craig Freeman almost universally gets outstanding ratings from his students, and for good reason. And one of your former students says, have you talked to Beyonce lately?
Always, of course, of course. It's a running gag in one of my classes. And so hopefully my wife is not listening, but, you know, I have my second wife was Beyonce. And so we've had some fun with that.
Really?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Blue Ivy looks a lot more like me.
Talk about bearing the lead. You were married to Beyonce?
You know, if you look very closely at Blue Ivy, she favors me much more than she does Jay-Z.
My goodness, a secret life for Craig Freeman. So does that mean Beyonce will be spending a lot of time in Stillwater?
You know, she's more of a Tulsa girl, and so, you know, we'll probably end up settling there.
Your rendezvous in Tulsa?
Exactly.
24 hours in Tulsa, Gene Pitney, remember?
Exactly.
All right, well, thank you, and let's stay in touch.
Absolutely. Thank you, Baton Rouge. It's been a phenomenal 20 years.
Well, thank you. And we're joined now by Hal Markovitz, an accomplished writer. And his latest work is Olé, Capturing the Passion of Bullfighters and Aficionados in the 21st Century. And the running of the bulls continues to be a fascination for many. In fact, in New Orleans this weekend, the New Orleans version of the running of the bulls is taking place. And the event is, of course, best known for its location in Pamplona. And that's the focus of Hal Markovitz's book. Good morning to you, Hal.
Good morning.
Well, Ernest Hemingway is the person, I think, who is most responsible for this fascination that continues more than 50 years after the death of Papa. What is the fascination with Pamplona and the running of the bulls?
Well, from the perspective of the runners, it's a question that isn't easily answered. There are people, many of whom contributed essays to our book, who go year after year after year, and they get in front of the bulls and they run, and it's quite a death-defying experience for them. And I think they're from what I learned from knowing these folks and talking to them and editing their essays. They have this brotherhood, so to speak, this camaraderie. They see each other once a year. They share this experience, this death-defying experience, and they compare notes on technique. There is actually a technique how to do this. It's a little surprising to me. I thought you just got out there and ran, but no, there are right ways and wrong ways to do it, and you can see the live streams on the internet now of the run, which is officially known as the Encierro. That's the Spanish word for it.
Well, since 1910, at least 15 people have been killed in the bull running in Pamplona. Why do people do it? You're hearing from Hal Markovitz that this is a passion that has to be satisfied by many. We'll talk more with Hal about Olé. He is the editor of this book about the running of the bulls. Back in 90 seconds on WRKM. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Frank Barnett is producing, and our guest for a bit longer is Hal Markovitz, a journalist of more than 30 years based in Philadelphia. And his latest work is Olé, and it's a compilation of stories about the running of the bulls. Among the contributors in the book is a fellow named John Hemingway. His grandfather, Ernest, was an aficionado of bullfighting and wrote two books on the subject. And every year, people stream to Pamplona to participate in this event, literally risk their lives. How dangerous is it, Hal Markovitz?
Well, as you said, 15 people have died in the past century. Every year, there's numerous injuries. This week, one of the contributors to our book, a writer named Bill Hillman, was knocked down and gored by a bull during the run on Wednesday. He's understand it was a serious injury, but he's expected to recover. He's in a Pamplona hospital now. So it is dangerous. It is a there's no question about it. You risk your life out there.
Well, through the years, most of the people who have been killed were from Spain, but there are those, including a gentleman in 1995, 22-year-old Matthew Tasio of Glen Ellyn, Illinois. He was killed. Americans, for whatever reason, seem to be attracted to danger. What's the reason for that?
Well, it's a hard question to answer. There was a study done back in the 1950s, which was written by some psychologists who attended the Dartmouth-Princeton game, believe it or not, in, I think it was 1951. And they wanted to know why people like to watch dangerous sports, because during this game, which was, certainly a typical football game of the times, the Dartmouth quarterback got knocked down and carried off the field, probably with a concussion or something. And they couldn't help but see that the Princeton fans were whooping and carrying on, and this was terrific that this guy got knocked out of the game. And why is that? Why was everybody cheering when this guy got run over by a linebacker? So they did some research on it, and they found out, there's a lot going on in the brain when somebody goes to see a sporting event. A lot of people enjoy the competition, enjoy the athleticism, enjoy everything there is that makes a sport a sport. But there's also this strange fascination with danger, and it's the same kind of thing that clicks in your brain when you drive down the highway and you see a wreck, and you slow down, and you want to see what's going on. It's the same thing that happens, at a NASCAR race where there might be a crash, or, as I said, a football game when there is an accident, or an accident, or an injury, or in bullfighting when the matador gets run over. So it's something in our brains. There's a lot going on there, and half the brain likes to see the game, and the other half likes to see some rough and tumble.
And goring is is a lot of rough and tumble. 297-5633 in our remaining moments with Hal Markovitz. His book is Olé, and it's about the running of the bulls. And I'm going to pass along some inquiries from listeners. One observation from Tracy, who asks or says that, in his view, City Slickers did as much to popularize the running of the bulls in Pamplona as did Hemingway. Didn't Billy Crystal get gored in City Slickers?
Oh, you mean the movie? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I think that, as I recall, they had a brief, sort of a brief view of the run. I think the whole movie was about a couple guys looking for thrills.
Middle-aged guys.
Yeah, they started out in Pamplona. That it's kind of funny that the characters that they were portraying, I think, are your typical tourists who go to Pamplona perhaps once in their life. They've heard about it, they've read about it, they've seen it, news coverage of it, and they say, let's go do this. So they go to Pamplona and they jump into the street during the run, and they run a few dozen yards or something alongside of the bull, and then for the rest of their lives they can tell people they ran with the bulls. And to the true Pamplona runner, that's those people shouldn't be allowed in the city. This is a very serious thing to them, a very somber event to them, sort of joyous event certainly, but they take it very seriously. And as I said, there are techniques to this which I didn't know. And they compare notes after the run. How did you do? Did you do this? Did you do that?
Have you ever done it, Hal?
I have never done it. I don't think I'm at the stage in my life where I would want to try it. I have done a little amateur bullfighting in Spain, but not with full-sized animals. That was enough thrill for me.
All right. Well, can any Joe Blow go run with the bulls if he wants to?
Yeah, that's you get yourself to Pamplona, you get yourself into the street before 8 a.m., which is when the rocket goes off. And there's two streets, I believe, that have been blocked off for the run. It's about 900 yards. You get in the street, you can run with the bulls all the way into the bull ring, which is where the run ends.
What are the most dangerous parts of the run?
Well, as I said, the street, the course is about 900 yards long, and there's two places in the course. If you want to go on the internet and watch the live stream, or not the live stream, but the stream of it, invariably, when things go wrong, they go wrong in two places. And the first place, there's actually a bend in the street about halfway, and what happens is there's six bulls. And they're running headlong, and they get to this curve, and they don't know there's a curve there. They just keep running, and invariably, you know, they're running on a asphalt or cobblestones or whatever it is there, and they may lose their footing. And when that happens, the bulls go tumbling, and when the bulls go tumbling, anything around them is going they're going to roll over anybody who's running around them. So that's one place. It's called La Curva, and it's the curve in the street. The other place where it tends to get dangerous is right before they get to the end, the street narrows. It's a section they call Estafita, and it's a place where the street narrows. And we have thousands of runners in the street, and when the street narrows, they get bunched together. And if somebody trips, everybody's going to trip. There's going to be a big pileup of people, and then along come the bulls.
All right. Let's try to get a call or two in. Dan in Spanish Town. Dan, you're on the air with Hal Markovitz, author of Olé.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Hal, when he fought the bull, was he a Naviero, or how did that go? And did he dispatch the bull at the end of the fight, like, as is normal?
No, a Naviero is a Spanish term for a student bullfighter, and certainly I was not anywhere near that class. I fought two baby bulls, for lack of a better term, that are known as vacas, and these are very young animals. They're bigger than the biggest dog you've ever seen, and smaller than a pony. Let's put it that way. They can knock you down. They can punish you. They can push you around, and all that happened to me. But they probably can't kill you,
right,
unless maybe you fall awkwardly or something and break your neck or so. But and no, I didn't. I did not dispatch them. I was lucky enough to get out of there before they got the better of me.
Thank you, Hal Markovitz. And by the way, I did want to note, I've got some listeners who have chimed in on the running of the bulls tomorrow in New Orleans. The Big Easy Roller Girls Roller Derby team has performed this version of the Bullroom, a bull run, since 2007. And the team is dressed as bulls and skates after runners through the French Quarter. There were 14,000 runners and over 400, quote, bulls from all over the country in 2013. So it is a bull run of sorts, but it's not Pamplona. Pamplona, you really are facing potential danger, and 15 people have died. And what's the count on the number of those who have been injured through the years? Do we know?
That's a number I've never looked up, but every year, you know, every day of the run, I would say there's 8 or 10 people who get banged up somehow. Some are able to just limp away and laugh about it later, and some end up in the hospital. So, you know, it's not for the faint of heart.
Thank you, Hal Markovitz. Olay is the book. Good to talk with you, sir.
Thank you very much.
And we're joined in studio in our remaining time, our last guest of the week. We saved the best for last, Jennifer Meyer of CASA in the Capital Area. And the 20th annual CASAs for CASA Playhouse fundraiser is coming soon. And good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're the recruitment coordinator,
yes.
And this is certainly a worthy organization in our community. And CASA has been around how long now, Jennifer?
We were founded in 1992.
So 22 years.
22 years.
Yes. And for those unfamiliar, it's court-appointed special?
Yes, court-appointed special advocate.
So what does that mean?
Well, at Capital Area CASA, we serve East Baton Rouge Parish, and we recruit and train community volunteers who are appointed by a judge to advocate for the best interests of a child living in foster care. And the end goal of this advocacy is so that that child can reach a safe and permanent home as quickly as possible.
You don't have to be a lawyer to be
an
advocate.
No. CASA volunteers do not provide legal representation, and they do not replace the social worker. They are an independent voice, again, speaking solely for the best interests of the child.
So you're looking always for people who have an interest in this, who would be qualified to do the job.
Yes. No special background is required to become a CASA volunteer. You must be 21 years of age or older. We serve children and youth from birth to age 18, so lots of different ages to work with. Anyone from any walk of life can come learn more about becoming a CASA volunteer.
We're visiting with Jennifer Meyer. She is the recruitment coordinator for CASA of Greater Baton Rouge, and started in 1992. How many volunteers?
Right now we have 87 volunteers that are currently active.
87.
Yes.
And you'd like to have, if in your dream world, how many?
Well, children are continuously entering the foster care system, so we are always in need of more volunteers. It varies from month to month, of course, how many children we are serving. Right now, we are serving 124 children on 91 cases, so we do have some of our staff currently that is serving those children without a volunteer advocate, so we are always in need of more volunteers.
Can you be an advocate for more than one person, or do you limit it?
Normally, our CASA volunteers serve on one case at a time, and that could involve one child or a small sibling group.
And when you have an advocate, how long does that term last? Indefinitely?
It really depends on the case. We ask our CASA volunteers to serve on their cases for at least a year or until that case is closed, which can vary depending on the case. These children have had so many people in and out of their lives that CASA does not want to be a contributing factor. So it just depends. Some children are in foster care quickly if there's a suitable relative that can take custody. Others can linger in the system for years at a time.
If someone is hearing your voice, Jennifer, and they would like to be an advocate or like to learn more about it, what's the first step?
Well, the first step to becoming a CASA volunteer is to attend a very brief orientation session at our office. We're on Louisiana Avenue, and those only take about 45 minutes. They're every week, usually once a week, different times of the day, different times of the week to accommodate different schedules, and that's where you can learn more.
And since CASA's inception, more than 1,000 advocates have provided a voice in court for more than 2,000 children.
Yes.
So that's a substantial amount of people over 22 years. I'm sure you have some great success stories.
Definitely. It's a really wonderful thing to see these children reaching safe and permanent homes because of the voice that CASA gives them in the courtroom.
What about the CASA Playhouse fundraiser?
It's our 20th annual CASAs for CASA fundraiser. It's presented by title sponsor Holmes Building Materials. We raffle off a very fancy playhouse in the center court of the Mall of Louisiana for a three-week period. This year, it's valued at about $17,000, excuse me. So a very fancy playhouse. Usually, it has a little wall air conditioning unit. It's got some electrical outlets, and it raises awareness and funding to support our organization.
So you could participate in this without actually being an advocate, but it's at the Mall of Louisiana,
yes.
Isn't it? Okay. And we'll be there for a few weeks.
Yes, it will be on display starting on July 26th all the way through August 17th.
Is this program replicated in other places?
Yes. CASA is nationwide. There are different programs across the state and across the nation, some of them serving different size areas. Some serve multi-parish or multi-county areas. Some serve just one, like I said, Capital Area CASA. We serve the 19th Judicial District, which is East Baton Rouge Parish.
So there are a lot of kids who are in need.
Yes, definitely. And I do want to mention before I leave here today that we are very much in need of more than a few good men to become positive male role models for some of these boys.
So you have a dearth of males?
Let's see. As in 2013, just for the full year last year, 17% of our volunteers were male, and 52% of the children we served were male. So we definitely need some more.
So 83% are female then, right? If 17% are men.
Mm-hmm. Huh? So it was 21 out of 124 volunteers were male.
So need more males. Yes. How do they find you?
They can visit our website at casabr.org or give us a call at 225-379-8598.
Well, thank you, Jennifer Meyer. You're doing good work, and we appreciate the visit.
Thank you.
We hope you and all of our listeners have a great weekend. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.
Not actually being an advocate, but it's at the Mall of Louisiana,
yes.
Is it? Okay. And we'll be there for a few weeks.
Yes, it will be on display starting on July 26th all the way through August 17th.
Is this program replicated in other places?
Yes. CASA is nationwide. There are different programs across the state and across the nation, some of them serving different size areas. Some serve multi-parish or multi-county areas. Some serve just one, like I said, capital area CASA. We serve the 19th Judicial District, which is East Baton Rouge Parish.
So there are a lot of kids who are in need.
Yes, definitely. And I do want to mention before I leave here today that we are very much in need of more than a few good men to become positive male role models for some of these boys.
So you have a dearth of males?
Let's see, as in 2013, just for the full year last year, 17% of our volunteers were male, and 52% of the children we served were male. So we definitely need some more.
So 83% are female then, right? If 17% are men.
Mm-hmm. So it was 21 out of 124 volunteers were male.
So need more males. So yes. How do they find you?
They can visit our website at casabr.org or give us a call at 225-379-8598.
Well, thank you, Jennifer Meyer. You're doing good work, and we appreciate the visit.
Thank you.
We hope you and all of our listeners have a great weekend. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at wrkf.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.